Hello, I'm Curtis Powers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Those watching on all the different platforms, thank you so much for doing that. Please consider going to agendaweekly.com to become a subscriber and get all our resources every week. Those that are fasting, I just want to encourage you in that and thank you for doing that. I hope you're seeing the benefits. And one other thing I wanted to remind you of, anyone that wasn't able to watch last week's episode on the cycles of history, I really encourage you to do that. I think there was a lot of key points in there that help all of us understand the times in a more meaningful way. So I hope you'll watch that if you haven't. And we talked last week about spending a little bit. And as I started to think more about that, this year the Democrats are going to spend $10.5 trillion. And I started to think, man, that's a lot of money. Do you know what it comes out to be? It comes out to be $1.25 billion every hour. Think about that. Every hour, $1.25 billion every hour. So they're averaging $30 billion a day in spending. That's crazy. It's not sustainable. And anyway, I was just surprised at those numbers. Today, we are going to be talking about a book that was written 2,500 years ago called The Art of War. This is kind of the Bible of strategy and military warfare. It's studied at all our military academies. And so being that all of our soldiers and generals know about this book and they've studied this book, when we see generals doing things that this book says don't ever do that or you will lose in warfare, we realize that no, that's purposeful. They've been taught these principles. They understand. And so when we see in Afghanistan, we know, no, that's purposeful. That's not ignorance. If you just read this one little book that has been the manual for all strategy in all warfare for over 2,000 years, you would know you don't do that. That's not the way things work. But anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today. And just the principles in here. Because as I read it again and thought about Agenda Weekly, I realized this is talking about military situations with weapons, but it deals with all warfare. Maybe right now the troops aren't marching, the tanks aren't rolling in. But for 60 plus years, there's been a culture war going on. And these strategies have been used against us by those of the left that understand strategy very well. And so I think it's important we talk about it so we can see where we've made big mistakes, what the enemy is doing, which will help us better understand the best way to combat the attacks that we're facing. But again, thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. So as we get into The Art of War, I'm just going to be covering several of the key principles that relate to us today, what's going on this week and at this time in American history. But it's a book worth reading. It is so powerful and so logical, has so much wisdom in it. When you read it, you go, that makes sense. That is the wise thing to do. But as I begin here, just listen to some of these snippets and I will explain how they relate to what's going on today. A military operation involves deception. That's one of the most fundamental things. When you're engaged in a battle, and again, we've been in a culture war and in a war for our country for decades. And it's all about deception. Even though you're competent, appear to be incompetent. Though effective, appear to be ineffective. So you always want to be casting deception in every direction. And that's what the left has done. Acting like, oh, we don't know what we're doing. But behind the scenes, they're organized, they're strategic, and they're moving forward. So that's one of the main fundamental principles of this book. All warfare is based on deception. So what happened to us during this Cultural Revolution is we didn't realize we're at war. So when you don't even know that you're at war, every deception you believe, because you think, why would they lie to me? because you didn't realize, no, this is an enemy that's trying to destroy me. And so that's why they've been so successful over the last 60 years. When they told us in the 60s, people should be able to look at pornography. It's freedom of choice. It's not right that they're not allowed to do that. We thought, well, I don't agree with that, but I guess freedom of choice. We didn't realize, no, that's an attack from our enemies, because they know if pornography is pushed through the culture, it will collapse. The immorality will increase, the divorce rate will increase, and then the children will be left to the state to be raised. So they knew exactly what they were doing, but we didn't see it as warfare. So we didn't see the deception of acting like, oh, it was freedom is what it was all about. It wasn't about freedom. It was about destruction of our country. When you're going to attack nearby, make it look as if you're going to go a long way. When you're going to attack far away, make it look as if you're going just a short distance. It's always the opposite. That's Marxism. They got that from Sun Tzu, obviously. It's the opposite. You're always talking about the opposite of what you're doing. Oh, we care about this, and it's really the opposite of that, what you're trying to push. And so just right now with the, you know, racism stuff, we're anti-racist. No, they're totally racist. But they're going to say, no, we're anti-racist. So there's that confusion, which gives you the ability to dominate the opposition. Tire them by flight, cause division among them, attack when they are unprepared, make your move when they do not expect it. It's all the different things. Every single one of those things cause division among them. Just think of the division they've caused on our side, where we're fighting over all these little issues and things instead of focused on them and what they are doing. But that's strategy and warfare. The one who figures on victory, so the one who's planning and strategizing for it at headquarters before even doing battle, is the one who has the most strategic factors on his side. The one who figures on inability to prevail at headquarters before doing battle is the one who has the least strategic factors on his side. The one with many strategic factors will win. The one with few strategic factors will lose. That is what we've seen. The left has had a plan. They are so organized. Remember ACORN, remember all the different groups, Saul Alinsky. They've had a plan, and they don't ever give up. They just keep going forward. A perfect example is this week. We saw some great victories for Republicans against Democrats in traditionally Democratic areas. And that's encouraging, and that's wonderful. And I'll talk more about that in a minute, how important that momentum is. But they don't care about that. Win, lose, or draw, they're moving forward. They keep doing what they are planning on doing because it's an agenda. It's not just, oh, the election here or whatever. They will still be pushing in the school boards. And you'll see, like with critical race theory, if there's enough momentum that builds against it and enough people say, we don't want that, will they take it out? No, they're not going to take it out. They'll rename it. That's what they do every time with Common Core, those principles. A huge backlash came against them 10 years ago when they started pushing Common Core. So what did they do? Okay, yeah, we're not going to do Common Core. But they put all those same principles in the schools and just rename them, and they keep doing it. And so we have to understand that we're so looking at the superficial, at the titles of things. And we're looking at the words instead of the actions. When they say, okay, critical race theory, we won't push it anymore. 15 years ago in Idaho, when I was a representative, I was looking through some things that had been passed in the legislature. And one of the things was the Republican conservative legislature had passed a law saying children in our universities must be taught Western civilization. And I thought, well, that's a good thing. But I took the time to do something. I don't know if any of the other representatives took the time to do. I said, I want to see the course. So I went to Boise State University and looked at the course on Western civilization, assuming if they're required to teach our children about our history, you know, that's going to be a positive thing. But guess what the name of the course was? The Problems with Western Civilization. And as I looked through the curriculum, all it focused on was every mistake Western civilization has made, and it exaggerated it tremendously. This is 15 years ago in Idaho. We were so glad the legislature passed a law saying our children need to study Western civilization. But we didn't look to see, wait a minute, not any view of Western civilization is correct. It's the view that shows all the benefits and all the blessings and all the advances that were made because of the Judeo-Christian principles that were the foundation of Western civilization and blessed the entire world. But that's what happens when we don't look at the actions and we just listen to the words. Here's another key point in here that's really hurt us dramatically. When you do battle, even if you're winning, if you continue for a long time, it will dull your forces and blunt your edge. If you keep your armies out in the field for a long time, your supplies will be insufficient. And of course, that means your energy levels are going to drop. And the left has really worn us down by attacking us on 1,000 fronts. We weren't organized, so we didn't know which battle to fight. So we're all fighting different ones, and they are in control of the fight because they are the ones deciding what the attacks are going to be. We're always on the defense. We're always just trying to sustain things the best we can. And it's like we almost plan on losing. We know we're going to lose, but let's lose as little as possible. Well, when you go into a warfare situation like that, if your troops know we're going to lose this thing, let's just try to lose as few people as possible, have as few casualties as possible, you're in trouble. And that's, I feel like the war we've been in my entire life, it's we knew we were going to lose. We knew we're not going to have a victory in any area, and so we didn't. When I first started filming the Agenda films in 2009, I was doing an interview with Trevor Loudon, who you're familiar with now. He was from New Zealand at the time and had just been researching who were the people and groups that were trying to take America down from within. And I remember at the end of our interview there in Seattle, I was just talking to him and I was curious to get his opinion. I said, Trevor, who do you think has been most successful at destroying our country from within? Now, I didn't know if he'd even have an answer to that. It's such a broad question. I thought he'd probably say, oh, there's just so many people. But he didn't. He didn't have one moment of hesitation before he said, Robert Borisage. I said, Robert Borisage, who's that? I'd been studying this issue and never even heard of him. He said, he's the most influential. He's a behind the scenes kind of guy, but he is huge. And so I typed in that night, Robert Borisage. I found his office in Washington, D.C. It was right next to the White House. And I typed a little email. Hey, I'm making a documentary on how much America has changed over the last 50 years and how much further we still need to go. So he would assume I'm coming from his side. And I just thought, oh, it'd be interesting to get an interview. By the next day, I got an email back from his secretary. Said, I'd be happy to do the interview. Here's the day and time I'm available. Come to Washington, D.C., and I'd be happy to be involved. So right there, before I get into who he was and the strategy he had, that made a huge impact on me. Because so many people on our side, the conservative leaders that I had emailed to try to do an interview with, to expose the agenda to grind America down, it had been so hard to get an interview with them. I mean, for 6 weeks, they'd email me back and forth. How many people are going to see this? And is it worth my while? And just on and on, worrying about the details instead of worrying about, hey, you're trying to influence others? I'd love to be involved with that. I don't care how many you influence. Well, this guy who was the most influential person in America from the left, from Trevor Loudon's point of view, and I believe he was right, within hours said, yes, be happy to be involved. When we came there, I felt awkward because it was weird being there. But when he came to do the interview, I kind of apologized. Well, this is just a small project we're doing. He said this to me. He said, if you influence 100 people with this, it's worth my time. I was like, wow. But then he went on And he had pictures on his desk of him and Castro together and different things showing he was high up. He was a radical leftist Marxist, and he had been the head of many different organizations with that had one intent, to grind America down. But as I got to the end of the interview with him and asked him, what can we do to make a difference? You know, we've got Obama in there now. He had just been elected. What do we need to do? And he turned to me and he said, our work has just begun. And I realized, well, that's one difference right there. What does our side do when we win an election? All right, we got our guy in there. Let's go play golf. He said, our work has just begun. So that was one key element of their strategy. And then I said, well, you know, how do we do this? What's the best thing we can do? And one of the things he said was so genius. Again, it made me realize why we are losing. And our side is so not strategic and so pathetic. He said, now we need to get to the left of Obama and start attacking him. And I was like, attacking him? Why would we want to attack him? He said, because if we can attack from the left and all the conservative people will be attacking from the right, it'll make Obama look like he's right in the middle. And I was like, oh my goodness, these people. This is just in the spring of 2009. Obama's just gotten in there, and these are the type of people that were behind him to organize the deception and the strategy to remake America and fundamentally transform America. He also, as I'd come in to do the interview, said, I'm so sorry, we're short-staffed today. Obama has taken most of my employees into his cabinet. That's how much influence he had also. But when he went on to action points, I had asked all the top conservative leaders at the end of the interviews that are in agenda, what do we do to make a difference? They all had things that were one person doing one thing to make a difference. Everything he said was totally different. His was, you need to conserve the energies of the troops. So he understood that principle right there I just talked about. Your forces will get dull and blunt if you overuse them. He said, we need individual people, each person that watches your video, they need to get a group of 10 or 20 friends that they have the text numbers of, and they'll meet with them once a month to have coffee. But those people will all be available whenever there's an emergency meeting or something they need to come to. They don't need to keep track of the details. They don't need to keep track of what's going on. Just the one leader does. But if there's a city council meeting or a school board meeting that they need to be at, then that person, because they have coffee with them once a month and just tell them what's going on in the country and stuff, they know, yes, I might be called on once a month to do something. I'm willing to go. And so they're full of energy because they haven't done anything all month. But the leader texts them and says, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, school board meeting. And that one individual then is able to bring 20 people to that meeting that are going to stand there and say, this is wrong. Racism is prevalent in America. We need critical race theory taught in the schools to make things just and fair and right. And he went on and on like that. And he understood that principle. We have to conserve our energy for the main attacks on the main issues to get control of the main areas, education, media, entertainment, and that's what they were doing. It was pretty amazing. When your forces are dulled, your edge is blunted, your strength is exhausted, and your supplies are gone, then others will take advantage of your debility and rise up. Then even if you have wise advisors, you cannot make things turn out well in the end. That's even if we have the right course, we're also worn out because we're not organized, we're not strategic, we're fighting 1,000 battles at the same time. And they know by doing that, that's why they attack us in 1,000 different places. They know this principle here, wear the other side out. Their troops are exhausted, they can't do anymore, they'll give up, and we win. And they know exactly what they're doing. And then it says this, therefore, I have heard of military operations that were clumsy but swift, but I have never seen one that was skillful and lasted a long time. It is never beneficial to a nation to have a military operation continue for a long time. What does that make you think about? The Vietnam War, perhaps? going on year after year after year. They knew it is never beneficial to a nation to have a military operation continue for a long time. They were purposefully not wanting to win that war, Henry Kissinger and many others, because that wasn't the point of the war. The point of the war was to embarrass the West, to impoverish the West, and to make people in America tired. We're just tired of all these wars and fights, and so we just submit to whatever. And that's what it was about. Afghanistan, we're there for 20 years and then we walk away. Why were we there 20 years? Military action must be swift and decisive. No war should last over 12 months. Anyway, so but you see from that, it's purposeful destruction. It's leadership knowing the art of war principles and looking at history. Anyone would see that, hey, it's not good to be engaged in these battles year after year. The men and the troops, they lose morale. They start to lose focus. They start to ask the question, what are we here for? Like all the military members that fought in Afghanistan, I know right now they're going, what was the point of us being there? What was the point of all our buddies dying? What was it? And you have to go, nothing. And that's just disgusting. That just makes you sick to your stomach when you realize, no, they all died for nothing. And then when you leave, the final nail in the coffin, let's arm the enemy military with the finest equipment in the world so they'll be more deadly from here on out. It's terrible, but they knew what they were doing. When a country is impoverished by military operations, it is because of transporting supplies to a distant place. Transport supplies to a distant place, and the populace will be impoverished. 2,500 years ago, Sun Tzu said, if you keep fighting these wars at distant places, the people in your country are going to be impoverished. They're going to suffer because of that waste. Just think of the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars we have wasted all over the world for nothing. When power and resources are exhausted, then the homeland is drained. The common people are deprived. He goes on more about that. You don't want to destroy your own country unless that's the point of the war in the first place. And Afghanistan, I think they've spent $3 trillion there. But here's the thing. Here's an important point to understand. When government wastes money, it's not just the money they're wasting. That's one thing. You waste $3 trillion. Yeah, that's a lot of money to waste. But it's the opportunity cost of what that $3 trillion could have done that you lose for the long haul. Just for instance, that $3 trillion, if our government wouldn't have wasted it, okay, then the taxpayers would have had $3 trillion more of their own dollars to spend. And you understand, when the people have that money, they might go into their town and go eat at a restaurant. So the money goes to the restaurant. They get a nice meal. But then the restaurant owner has the extra money. So he might buy a new car at the car dealership. And so he has his nice new car. But then the car dealership has the money. And he might decide, hey, I'm going to start another business in this town. So he puts it into a rents of a spot from someone else and starts his new business in town. And then the person that owned the rental property goes, oh, now I've got money. And the money keeps circulating. And every one of those transactions produces sales tax and different types of taxes. So it keeps funding the government, but in a way of productivity instead of destruction. And it keeps circling around and around. That $3 trillion from Afghanistan, if it was still in America, would still be bouncing around, making people wealthier, making them more productive, and bringing even more taxes into the government. So, but when you waste the money, it's like when we buy things from China. Then we get a product, but the money goes to China, and it stays there, and it makes them richer. Then that money's bouncing around China forever, not in America. I mean, buying American is so important. And right now, on a side note, because our ports are all backed up, that means we're going to mainly have access to American-made products the next several months, which is wonderful. I hope the ports never open again if we could get people to start buying USA. Made in America. It is so vital because then not only do you get your product, but you were able to then fund jobs in America. And then the people that you funded that had jobs in America, they have money to buy other things in America or to build a new home or to do whatever. And your country just keeps getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier as the money keeps growing and keeps getting passed around. And so that's why government programs, government waste is so much more significant than just how they wasted $3 trillion. Oh, no. They wasted the opportunity cost of a $3 trillion, which would have benefited our country year after year after year forever. And it's gone. It was in a meaningless nonsense program. That's why these environmental concerns are so deadly. You're pumping trillions of dollars into this nonsense to stop climate change, which man has no control over. And but when you do that, that's money that's gone and it's wasted and it's never to be regained. And so it makes everybody poor and poor and poor, which is the point of it. That's the point of big government programs. That's the point of military expeditions to nowhere for no reason that lasts forever. That's the point of the environmental movement, is to destroy the wealth of the West so they'll be impoverished just like everyone else. And so when you're in poverty, socialism, communism, whatever, you don't care. All you care about is, what am I eating today? And they know that. If you use the enemy to defeat the enemy, you will be strong wherever you go. If you use the enemy to defeat the enemy, that's exactly what they've done, that divide and conquer strategy. Here's a quote from Vladimir Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union, on that exact point of divide and conquer. Divide the people into hostile groups by constantly harping on controversial matters of no importance. Isn't that amazing? Here's a key point that we need to get better at. Trump helped us in this area tremendously, but we need to keep it going in the same direction. Listen to this. If your forces are orderly while theirs are chaotic, if you are excited and they are sluggish, then even if they are more numerous, you can do battle. I mean, the left always builds enthusiasm for their movements. They present them in terms of morality and good versus evil. And that's Zelensky told them to do that. Always make it a black and white issue. And that's what they've done. And our side, we're all tired and worn out. You know, they're saying, hey, come with us. We're going to save the planet. Which sounds, hey, that's pretty meaningful. I think I might do that with you. We need to get better at packaging our movements, our causes, in a way where people see the validity, they see the purposefulness, they see how beneficial it is to everyone, and so they're motivated to be involved. And Trump helped in so many ways, just in energizing our side to realize, yes, we do have the right ideas, we do have the right things. It does work better when you do things by conservative principles as opposed to these liberal leftist principles. And people started to see that, and it was very helpful. If the generals do not help the leadership and harbor duplicity in their hearts, then the country will be weak. Listen to that again. If the generals, like Milley and Lloyd Austin and some of those, are generals, just think, those were the guys there with Trump. If the generals do not help the leadership, like a President Trump, and harbor duplicity in their hearts, they're not really on board when they act like they're on board, then the country will be weak. 2,000 years ago. Therefore, it is imperative to be careful in choosing people for positions of responsibility. We have these anti-American Marxists at the head of almost everything in America. And he's saying, you do that, your country is going to be weak, and you will lose the engagement. When your enemies are in charge, you are in serious trouble. Listen to this key point. So there are five ways of knowing who will win. Here's five ways you're going to know who's going to win a conflict, a battle, whatever type it might be. Those who know when to fight and when not to fight are victorious. So you know when it's time for engagement, when it's time, no, we're not ready for this yet. Those who discern when to use many or few troops are victorious. You know the size of the engagement, how big it needs to be. You're going to be victorious. Those who upper and lower ranks have the same desire are victorious. Those whose upper and lower ranks, that means the leaders and the common man, they're on board. That's what Trump helped us do. He helped us all kind of get on the same page. That's what Ronald Reagan did. He was so good at motivating the average guy that all of a sudden the leadership and the people were on the same page. We need to do this for America. And it's so helpful when they do that. Those who face the unprepared with preparation are victorious. Well, that's been the story of the last 60, 70 years. The other side has been prepared because they knew what they were trying to do. They knew the battles they were going to force upon us. We are just sitting here and all of a sudden we see a feminist movement pop up and we see the pornography start being pushed everywhere. And we see thing after thing and we're just, oh, what's that all about? Well, they were prepared. We weren't prepared. And so they knew how to strategically package it to push it on the people. And we thought, what's going on? Well, that's why they won every single battle. Those whose generals are able and are not constrained by their governments are victorious. These five are the ways to know who will win. So it'd be just interesting key points. It reminds me of the Korean War. General Douglas MacArthur had come there as the communists were taking over Korea. And so cleverly, Incheon, he slipped his troops around to cut the country in half and be able to get our troops moving northward. And he had said, listen, I can go right now across the bridges of North Korea into China and free China as well. Communism had just got going there with Mao Zedong, and they knew it was not a good situation. MacArthur knew communism was evil. We'd seen that. He'd already been slaughtering his own people. And Truman, the leadership wasn't in line with the generals. Like it says, it has to be. No. Fires Douglas MacArthur and says, no, we need to give half the country back to the communists. It wasn't right for us to free the whole country. And look at the difference between South Korea and North Korea today. And then I come to the number one principle in the entire book from my point of view. And it's this. He said, so it is said that if you know others and know yourself, you will not be imperiled in 100 battles. You will win every single one, even if you have 100 battles on your hand. When you know the enemy and you know yourself. If you do not know others, but know yourself, you will win one and lose one. So 50% of the time you're going to win if you know who you are, but you're not sure who you're fighting. If you do not know others and you do not know yourself, you will be imperiled in every single battle. Every time I read that, I think that's what they've done in our country. That's what the school system is completely about. That's what the media is completely about. That's what the entertainment in Hollywood is completely about. It's making sure the children do not know themselves. They don't know what America is all about. They don't know where we came from, how wonderful this country was. And yes, even with slavery, we don't talk about, yeah, every civilization had slavery. But our civilization, in the process of itself, in its own dictates, said, wait a minute, this isn't right. We're going to stop this. And it corrected the problems that it had. Every civilization has problems. But America has been the best at when they see a problem, going, hey, we got to stop that. That doesn't work. And we don't get any credit for that because we're not supposed to. So they don't teach our children that, to love Western civilization, to see all the incredible things that came about because of Western civilization and the biblical principles. So they don't know who they are. But then they don't know who the enemy is. They're told the enemy are the people that think America is great and that believe the Constitution is a wonderful document and those that are patriotic toward their country. So they've been taught the opposite of the truth. Instead, no, the Marxist teachers, and those are the enemies of our country. And those philosophies of Karl Marx and Nietzsche and all those are what are deadly. And Charles Darwin, those are deadly to freedom, to life and liberty. And so because they don't know themselves and they don't know the enemy, they know they're setting up the generations that come to lose every single battle when they attack them. And that was purposeful because they want to take over America. It's pretty amazing. But that's, I think, just such a vital point. Just have a few more of these, but these are important for you to know and understand and think about because we need to get more strategic in everything that we do. Now listen to this. So it is that good warriors take their stand on ground where they cannot lose and do not overlook conditions that make an opponent prone to defeat. Therefore, a victorious army first wins and then seeks battle. A defeated army first battles and then seeks victory. Listen to that. Okay. They're always back here planning victory. They've got it all planned out before they even start. They make sure. Therefore, a victorious army first wins and then seeks the battle. They already get in the positions where they've got the power, they've got the control. And then they realize, okay, now we're ready. Now let's do battle. And we're always the ones, a defeated army first battles and then seeks victory. Because they're choosing the time of the battle. They're choosing what the battle is going to be over. We're not. We're always defending ourselves. So, I mean, I just read that and I go, that's us, a defeated army. We've been a defeated army my entire life. And that has to change. And I think it's starting to change. I think finally people are realizing how serious this is. But I'm hoping that they're going to engage this at a level like the left does, where they realize it's an ongoing battle that will never end. So you can't ever let down your guard. You can't ever rest and go, oh, it'll be okay. It will never be okay. Because evil will always be trying to destroy that which is good. And so it never ends. That's what we're here on this earth to do, is to do battle. That's what God has called us to do battle against evil. And stand against it, expose it, and defeat it. And so we've got to energize ourselves with that. Okay, here's a key point about where we are right now. I think we're really in a good position in America as the momentum on our side has been building because people are finally saying enough is enough. But listen to this. When the speed of rushing water reaches the point where it can move boulders, this is the force of momentum. That's when all of a sudden you can throw a Democrat out of office in a Democrat state. You have some force there behind that water, that movement. It's moving boulders out of the way. When the speed of a hawk is such that it can strike and kill, this is precision. So it is with skillful warriors. Their force is swift. Their precision is close. Their force is like drawing a catapult. Their precision is like releasing the trigger. I mean, the force, when you finally, you've cranked the catapult back and it's ready to go, and you hit that trigger, it's firing. And I think that's what's happened here, and it's so good. But we have to build that on our side. We can't go, oh, good, we won the governor's race in Virginia. Now we can relax for another year. We can't do that. And I know you know that. But we have to alert those around us how serious this battle is. And so, and here's a point here about how important your efforts are. When an army has the force of momentum, even the timid become brave. When you stand up, it makes someone else that's timid become brave. That's why it's so important. Well, there was just two other people there with me at the rally. Yeah, but you motivated the two people to be brave and to stand up. And so it was so valuable. When it loses the force of momentum, even the brave become timid. That's why we can't let down. Because otherwise, the bravery that's there will just dissipate and disappear and vaporize before our eyes. Nothing is fixed in the laws of warfare. They develop based on momentum. Momentum is everything, and we've got some momentum going right now. And we need to use that momentum to motivate the parents, not only to fight the school boards and get on the school boards and change what's in there, but to get their kids out. Because it's just, even without CRT, the schools are rotten. The whole thing would have to be fundamentally transformed to teach our kids morality and to give them a great education in reading and writing and arithmetic and logic and debate and argument and understanding and wisdom. And everything would have to be changed for that to happen, and it's not going to happen. I know all of you have seen moments in sports when all of a sudden you're watching a game or something and one team's winning, but all of a sudden something happens and you can see it. You're like, uh-oh, the momentum is changing. And right now, that's the game we're in. We've been losing, but we look and go, wait a minute, we're winning. Well, what is it important for the team that's behind to do when the game is changing, when it's all of a sudden starting to go in the opposite direction? They need to keep fighting like they never have before. And so that's so important. I remember when I was a kid, my dad would let me watch the first half of Monday Night Football every Monday night. And Howard Cosell and Dandy Don Meredith and all those people were on there. And I remember, and you probably remember too, any of you that are a little bit older, Dandy Don Meredith, when he would see that happening in a game, all of a sudden he would see the momentum change. He would start singing the old song, "Turn off the lights, the party's over." And everyone would start laughing, and Howard Cosell would start laughing. And I'm sure the advertisers were going, "Well, you can't do that because you're going to make people turn off the game." But you would see it, and he would see it, and he would sing that song. And it was so funny because everyone knew it. And sure enough, that team would come back and beat the other team, and you just saw it all change. Well, that's what's happening right now. We need to grab a hold of that and not let it go because it is so vital. Listen to this. When you have the force of momentum in war, the brave can fight, the careful can guard, the intelligent can communicate. No one is useless. Did you hear that? No one is useless. Well, I'm not good at that many things. That's okay. You're good at something. That is so key right there. The brave can fight, the careful can guard, the intelligent can communicate. No one is useless. So important. We must stand and build on the momentum that we have right now. With courage, utilizing the talents God has given us. If you're older and at home, you could write letters to the editor. My parents have done that for years, and they get published all the time, but they clearly communicate truth. And whenever you clearly communicate truth in exposing lies, you never know who reads those letters to the editor. And you never know which individuals, when they read that letter that you wrote, all of a sudden they go, "Oh, I didn't realize that." And their mindset is changed. All of a sudden they see reality for the way it really is and not the way it's pretending to be and not the way it's pushed by the media and everybody else. It's so vital. Here's one last thing here. Listen. Getting people to fight by letting the force of momentum work is like rolling logs and rocks. Logs and rocks are still when in a secure place, but they roll on an incline. They remain stationary if square. They roll if round. Therefore, when people are skillfully led into battle, the momentum is like that of round rocks rolling down a high mountain. There is force. And that's where we are. Again, as we build this momentum at the local level, churches, neighborhoods, communities, towns, cities, states, and we maximize that through this next year, and hope and pray that if we have enough poll watchers and people there at the voting places, they won't be able to twist and deceive and destroy like they did last time. God could turn things around in that one area. And of course, that's just one area. When you're engaged in a battle, you can't just say, okay, let the troops fight over here, but we're going to ignore the airplanes. We're going to ignore the battleships. We're going to ignore all the other engagements. No, we have to keep the hearts and minds and souls of our children. And we have to educate others with the truth so they're set free from the lies. And we need to keep building on the momentum God has graciously given us. There's so much more I could go into on that. That's just some of the key principles of the book. There are so many more. We're just at a key point in history, as we've talked about before. And I'm thankful to be alive right now at this time. And I hope you are too. Last week, I forgot to mention our memory verse. I had it on the Agenda Weekly website, but I forgot to mention it. But here's the verses we've been learning the last 2 weeks. And I hope you're doing this. If you're new, I'm just giving you one verse a week to memorize. Write it out on a card, put it up on the mirror or wherever is a good place for you, and memorize it. It helps stimulate your mind, but it helps you hide God's word in your heart. So you're ready. If you were to be in a prison cell somewhere, that's what I always think about. If I was in prison somewhere, how much of God's word would I have with me to hold on to and to think about and to meditate on? But here's our verse the last 2 weeks. It's so important. It's Matthew 5, 11 and 12. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. That was Jesus talking. He's saying, listen, if they persecute you, they did the prophets before you. And great is your reward in heaven. He said, be glad. Be thankful. I mean, that's what this earth is for. That's what this life here is for. It's to stand for the truth. And when you do, he said, you will be persecuted. But blessed are ye when that happens. They're always going to lie about you because they have to. And their leader, their commander is the father of lies. So that's all they deal in is lies. That reward in heaven lasts forever. Have you ever looked at your old trophies from when you were 10 years old playing Little League football? Probably not much, if you even have them. They meant a lot at the time, but later you realize that's not that important. When you get rewards in heaven, they will be important and significant and enjoyed for all eternity. Our verse this week is Philippians 1, 21. Philippians 1, 21. Listen carefully. So important. It's nice and short, but it has so much meaning. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Now think about that. That's Paul saying, for me to live is Christ. I'm supposed to be like Christ. I'm supposed to be accomplishing his purposes. So think about that. When you're alive and you're living, is that like Christ? Is like being like he would want you to be? And he says, and to die is gain. Most people are so fearful of death because the uncertainty, the unknown. Oh, they want to hang on to this life. Why? Because they're scared of the unknown. But we know, no, to die is gain. When I finally check out, I'm going to heaven forever. No sickness, no disease, no crying, no anything, regrets, no hunger, no anything. And so just remember that. We have been given a great blessing by God in understanding salvation and being born again and knowing the truth. And so I appreciate you. Thank you for caring about what's going on. But we want to build on the momentum right now, right where we are, because God can use that momentum to really change things in a significant way. So until next week, God bless you.